Welcome to Tales from the Otherwood, a podcast exploring the folk tales and folklore of the East Midlands and beyond. I'm Dylan Knight, and I'll be your guide as we take one of the many paths in this magical, ever-changing woodland. And welcome to this, the very first episode of Tales from the Otherwood. Being based in Nottingham, I thought it was appropriate to tell one of the stories, if not one of the legends of Nottingham itself, Robin Hood. Just a word of quick warning though, this Robin Hood story may not be the kind that you're used to. This definitely is not going to be Errol Flynn and is definitely not going to be Disney. You have been warned. I present to you Robin Hood and the Monk. It was the merry month of May, and Little John took in the beauty of the green wood of Sherwood Forest. He looked at the verdant green leaves and the white flowers, and a big grin split his bearded face. He declared to all the merry men right there and then that there would be no other merry man such as he in all of Christendom. Turning to his friend and master, Robin Hood, he could see that Robin was troubled, for Robin had his hood drawn over his head, his knees tucked up to his chest, and his arms wrapped around his legs. He tried to cheer Robin up by asking him to look into the green wood and see if that the beauty of the wood could actually lift his spirits. Robin replied with a sigh, saying that today was Whitsun, and he hadn't been to Mass for over 2 weeks, and he needed to go and say prayers to the Virgin Mary, for Robin, even though he was an outlaw, was religious, and was especially devoted to the Virgin Mary. And there was nothing for it. His soul and his spirit and his heart yearned to deliver prayers to the Virgin herself, and so he would make to Nottingham. The rest of the merry men were aghast. "To Nottingham?" piped up Much the miller's son. "You can't go to Nottingham. We've had a good run, robbing from all those nobles and those churchmen. If you go to Nottingham now, the sheriff will have you. At least take a good company of men, 20 say, just to keep you safe." Robin, on rising, thanked Much for his concern and his advice, and said that he would actually have to go to Nottingham with a small company so that less attention would be brought. And so he and Little John would make their way to Nottingham, and Little John can carry his bow, and should anything happen, they can both take care of themselves. Little John agreed, although he did say that Robin will carry his own bow, thank you very much, and they can play a game along the way. They could make marks and targets and fire an arrow, and for everyone that hit, he would bet a penny. Robin agreed to this, although he extended this to 3 pennies per hit instead. And with that, both men with big grins, swords and bows by their sides, set off to Nottingham. The two outlaws did indeed play their game, and as good a marksman as Robin Hood was, it seemed that both aim and fortune were with Little John. For every shot hit, it appeared that Little John's were just that little bit faster and, well, a little bit better. And this passed the time, and they had fun, right up until it came to settling the bet.
5 shillings? How do you reckon it's 5 shillings?
Exclaimed Robin, seething with anger.
"Well, as I just said, master," explained Little John. "You didn't want to bet 1 penny per mark, you wanted to bet 3. Now, I've missed at least 2. You missed the first one, and the third, and the sixth, and the ninth. So by my reckoning, that is 5 shillings.
Robin clenched his jaw and said,
"All right, Little John. If it's 5 shillings they want, it's 5 shillings they'll get."
And Robin paid Little John, not with 5 shillings, but with 5 of his digits curled into a fist, which then paid a deposit at Little John's face. Little John retaliated in kind. He curled his huge hand into a fist, which then struck into the gut of Robin Hood, knocking the wind right out of him. Before both men knew it, Little John was standing over Robin with his sword drawing from its scabbard. Little John growled,
"If you were any other man, I'd have killed you where you stand. But as you're my master, you can find someone else to take my place. I'm done with you."
With that, Little John stomped off into the greenwood. Robin picked himself up. He was hurt, he was annoyed, and was also a little bit sad. He also knew that that he couldn't go back into the green wood to explain to the merry men why he'd come back, tail between his legs like. No, he'd already swore to his men he had to attend mass in Nottingham, and that's exactly what he was going to do. And so to Nottingham he went. And Robin was right. It was Whitsun. And at Whitsun, in Nottingham, and in fact all throughout England, there were big fairs, games of all sports and different kinds of fun, celebrations of food and drink. Big crowds, lots of crowds. So many, in fact, that Robin was able to sneak into the gates of Nottingham with no trouble at all. And he made his way to St. Mary's Church, where, before the cross and before the image of the Virgin Mary herself, he offered up prayers. A lot of the locals looked at him sideways and asked, "Is he Robin Hood? Is that him? Is that the one?" And some other people agreed, said it might be him. And some other people whispered, "No, I've heard he's taller." But there was one man who definitely recognised Robin Hood. A monk. A monk with a very wide, fat head, who made his way silently out of St. Mary's Church, and as soon as he got past the doors, he walked very calmly, then briskly, and then ran towards the nearest gates with the guards, saying, the felon Robin Hood, he is here. I know his face, for he has stolen £100 off of me, and I've never forgotten it till this day. Quickly, get the sheriff, bar the gates. Now is your chance to capture the felon Robin Hood." Both the monk and his word and report were taken to the sheriff himself, and the sheriff brought a retinue of men, clad in their finest armour and their best weapons. A company of these men had thick wooden staves, and the sheriff gave orders to these men that they would block all the doors so that Robin would not be able to escape. Inside the church of St. Mary's, Robin was still delivering his prayers, until he realised that the church was silent, more silent than usual. And then he heard the doors open, and the clanking of chainmail and thick, heavy boots. Turning around and drawing his two-handed sword out, he was rushed by a whole gang of guards heading towards him with their own weapons drawn. With a block to the left and a parries to the right, Robin stopped their blows from coming in. He thrust, he jabbed, until all 12 of these guards lay dead at his feet. And at last he was at hand-to-hand combat with the sheriff himself, and both were good swordsmen. For every strike that Robin hit, the sheriff blocked with his own blade. And the reverse happened too, for every time that the sheriff hit Robin, Robin parried with expert ease, until there was an opening, and Robin brought his sword down upon the sheriff's head. But the sheriff's head was protected by a very finely crafted helmet, and this caused the sword to snap the blade in two. "Cursed be the smith that made you!" yelled Robin as he threw the useless sword away. With a commanding call, the sheriff called for more men who came running through the main entrance. Robin dashed for the nearest exit and found to his dismay the door was bolted and blocked, and something on the other side was preventing him from opening them as well. The sheriff's men were soon upon him, and with biting, elbows to the face, elbows to the gut, punches and kicks, Robin fought as best as he could, tooth and claw. But the men were just too much for him, and eventually St. Mary's doors were burst open, and out came the retinue of men, carrying Robin Hood, with a sheriff, with his helmet now taken off, and singing and smiling, as they carted off Robin towards Nottingham Castle. And then once they got inside there, they took him to the dungeons and locked the cell door behind him. Now, Robin and his men were not without their friends and allies in Nottingham, and word eventually got to the merry men in Sherwood, and they were aghast and upset that their leader had now finally been captured and arrested. Little John had made his way back and explained all, blaming himself that by leaving Robin alone, he allowed Robin to be captured. But he commanded them all to be quiet and tried to convince them that storming Nottingham would not be a good idea. Eventually, they would all be killed, and it might very well mean that Robin himself would be hanged by the neck, if not worse. He had thought of a plan, and he needed much the Millerson to help him with it. The very next morning, both Much and Little John were looking out of the window of Mutcher's uncle's house. It was a tall window and could overlook Sherwood Forest and all the main roads going through it. And Little John was quite impressed. In fact, in the distance, he could see two forms along the road. And as they came a little bit closer, Little John swore he recognised the hood of one of those riders on horseback, and that was indeed the fat-headed monk. And so, both outlaws went to go and meet the monk and his page, who were trotting along the road quite nicely, thank you very much. And then they saw these two commoners head towards them. One was tall, well-built, very, very strong-looking, and had a thick black beard, and the other was shorter, skinnier, younger, and had a mop of red hair. They asked the monk and the page where they had come from and did they bring any news, for they had heard word that there had been an outlaw captured. The monk and the page looked at each other with smug, self-satisfied faces. And the monk explained that they had come from Nottingham, well, not just Nottingham, but from the house of the Sheriff of Nottingham and Derby and the Forests himself, because they had special orders to deliver the letters they were carrying to the king. They brought news that this was no ordinary outlaw who'd been captured and arrested. This was Robin Hood himself. The two commoners appeared to nod at each other and seemed very pleased with this. And the tall one with the big beard explained that Robin Hood had held them up some time ago and took all their money, and that, thanks to the monk, this means that they had news that Robin Hood was in jail and that they could rest easily. As a token of thanks, however, they would offer their services and guide the monk and the page down to London to protect them from brigands and outlaws, for you never know, Robin Hood's men may be around. The monk and the page thought this was marvellous, that the Lord should provide them with protectors and guides. And the monk even told these two men,
"Oh, further news on this. I was the very first man to lay a hand upon Robin Hood. You may thank me therefore."
And thank him they did. You see, Little John grabbed the monk's hood and yanked him down so hard that the monk came right off his horse and landed on his head. As the monk steadied himself and brought himself around, he was terrified and let out a shriek as he could see Little John bearing down on him with his great sword, saying, "Robin Hood was my master, and you'll never get to see the king." And with that, off came the monk's head. Not wanting to leave any witnesses, Much did the same to the page. Both heads and bodies were buried in the bracken and the soil, and the letters and horses were then taken down to London. The king himself had received these two messengers from Nottingham, and as they were knelt before him, he read out the letters and laughed.
"If I was to meet any such yeoman, it would be one such as Robin Hood himself. Now tell me, what happened to the monk that these letters describe?"
And the messenger, who was well-built and tall and had a big thick black beard, explained to the king that they had been charged with guiding and protecting the monk from outlaws and bandits, but it appeared that this was not what got to the monk. The monk's heart failed him, and he came off his horse. And as they were nowhere near a village or a town or anywhere to give the monk his last rites, they performed them right there and then and buried him in the soil. They felt that this mission had such importance they had to deliver the letters to the king just to make sure they got here in time. With this news, the king was impressed, and he told the court that both men had performed an admirable service and that they should be paid £10 each. And furthermore, they would have to give instructions to the sheriff himself and present his seal. So, monies were paid to both men. A wax seal was created and produced, and letters were written, and the two men got on their horses and made their way back to Nottingham, laughing. Both outlaws had found that the gates were indeed closed and shut. Calling upon the guard to see if they could be let in, the guard told them that because of the actions of Robin Hood's men, you know the ones, Little John, Much the Miller's son, Will Scathlock, and the rest, that were causing trouble of all various kinds, and so they had to close Nottingham to prevent them from getting in. Little John and Much looked at each other and asked if they could see the sheriff, for they had important business with him. And the guard would only let them through if they could produce the seal of the king, which they did, however. And so the guard took them to the sheriff himself, and the sheriff overlooked the letters and was quite impressed with what he read out.
"Ah, I see I'm to present Robin Hood to the king, eh? Well, this is good news indeed. But tell me, friends, what became of the monk I gave the letters to give to the king?"
The man with the big black beard explained that the king was so impressed with the monk's actions on identifying Robin Hood and allowing the sheriff to actually arrest him, rewarded him by making him the abbot of Westminster Abbey. And to this, the sheriff was impressed. The monk got a promotion, and he gets the honour of escorting and taking Robin Hood to the king, which means that the sheriff himself might be rewarded with some rich land or even a new title. So yes, this was good news, absolutely. And with that, the sheriff called for ale and for wine and for food to be provided for he and these two messengers of the king. And they celebrated, so much so that the sheriff had to be taken away singing to his own bed. Content that the sheriff was asleep and feigning sleep themselves, Little John and Much crept out of the sheriff's house and used their knowledge of Nottingham Street to get to the castle, where they used the king's seal to gain entry to go and see Robin Hood. Robin was quite surprised when he could hear two sets of boots heading his way. Thinking it'd be some of the guards, he was ready to give some verbal abuse. He was very surprised when he recognised both faces, especially when Much pressed his fingers to his lips to remain quiet. And Robin did as he was asked. Little John, however, called out to the jailer, saying, "Jailer! Jailer! It's Robin Hood! He's escaped!" And the jailer came running in, not to the empty cell, but to the blade of Little John, now withdrawn, pierced the jailer's belly and came through his back. The jailer dropped to the ground like a wet sack of spuds, and Little John took the keys, joking that he was now jailer. They unlocked the door and gave Robin a sword that was taken, without permission, might I add, from the sheriff's house. Should they run into any trouble, they were all now well armed. But luckily for them, creeping around in the dark, they didn't come across any guards, but using their knowledge of the castle, they got to the lowest walls, climbed over and down, and then made their way to Sherwood Forest. The very next morning, the sheriff awoke with a pounding head and a pounding chest and a horrible, horrible taste in his mouth. That pounding got louder, and he realised that was his door. Opening it, there were some guards waiting for him. And they gave him bad news, terrible news, of Robin's escape. Going down to the dungeons and seeing the jailer's dead body for himself, the sheriff fretted, knowing that he could not go and see the king without Robin Hood. He ordered the guards to search every street, every stile, every house, every room, but the most important thing they had to do was bring him Robin Hood. Back at Sherwood Forest, the merry men were ecstatic to see their leader and captain, Robin, once again, and their two friends. And they celebrated with wine, venison, and pastries. When there was a moment for Robin and John to be alone, John turned to Robin and said, "Right, I've done you a good turn, and I've got you out of jail. Now, you'll do me a good turn and say farewell, allow me to go on my way." And Robin stopped Little John from leaving and said, "John, I'm sorry for my pigheadishness and for my selfishness. If I could have any man captain of me and the men, it would be thee. So what do you say?" And he held out his hand. John hesitated and said, "How about I'm just your friend, and I'm one of the men. I'm happy with that." And both outlaws shook hands, clasped each other on the shoulder, and went back for more drinks. Word of what happened in Nottingham reached the king, and he was furious. And yes, he should hang the sheriff for his stupidity in allowing Robin Hood to escape. But in doing that, he would have to admit that he was tricked by the Merry Men himself, because the man he was talking to could only have been Little John. And the king admired Little John for his loyalty, especially in making a plan such as this, of such deviousness and cunning. And such loyalty he hadn't even seen even in his own court. So, the best thing, the king thought, was to say no more about it, and to leave it be. But he would always keep an ear out for Robin Hood, and he would know never to underestimate Robin and his men ever again. Right. Storytelling is thirsty work. Time for a cup of tea, I think. Put on the kettle or crack open your flask. It's time for a drink and a chat. Well, this was a different kind of Robin Hood, wasn't it? I told you, this wasn't Disney. And if anything, this was a very different Robin Hood to the one we've heard of. He's no Errol Flynn or Michael Praed from the 1980 series. Neither is he Kevin Costner or Russell Crowe. This Robin is devoted to the Virgin Mary, yet despises the church for reasons of his own. He's also quite tempestuous and ill-tempered. The location's about right, though, as Robin Hood and the Monk is set in Sherwood and in Nottingham. We've got some of the usual suspects as well. Robin, Little John, Much the Miller's son, and Will Scarlet, who's also mentioned as Will Scathlock. We also have the Sheriff, although I have used his full and proper title, as he was indeed the Sheriff to both counties and of the forests. But there's no mention of King John or Richard the Lionheart. Indeed, they, like Friar Tuck and Maid Marian, won't be associated with Robin and the stories until much later. In fact, we're not entirely sure which king that we meet, but it's often thought he's either one of the Henrys or one of the Edwards. The earliest mention of Robin Hood goes back to William Langland's Pierce Plowman, first published in 1377, where a lazy priest by the name of Sloth confesses, "I do not know my paternoster as perfectly as the priest says it, but I can rhyme of Robin Hood and Randolph the Earl of Chester." So even though this monk doesn't know his Lord's Prayer, he knows the rhymes and the poems of Robin Hood. So what were the rhymes of Robin Hood? The rhymes of Robin Hood actually refer to the ballads about Robin Hood, the earliest being published in 1450, and that was The Talking of the Monk and Robin Hood, or to use its later title, Robin Hood and the Monk. The most well-known ballad is known as The Jest of Robin Hood, of which there were allegedly 8 different versions printed before 1600, the most famous being the Wynkyn de Worde version, which was printed about 1492 to 1534. And it's thought that these ballads were performed by wandering minstrels and other entertainers amongst the common folk, as records stating of 20 aristocratic households who employed royal minstrels didn't record any stories or ballads about Robin Hood, at least not in the north of England. As well as the ballads, there are the plays of Robin Hood, which were also popular. And even though they were set in Nottingham and Yorkshire, it's actually quite interesting that the oldest and most numerous of these were located towards the southwest of the country. In 1981, there was an account of the plays being dated between 1474 and 1588, the oldest being found in Exeter, dated to 1427, and the latest was in Enstone, Oxfordshire, in 1652. The plays were often performed outside during the Maytime festivals. In fact, the plays of Robin Hood became the centrepiece to what was called the May Games, even replacing the May King with Robin Hood. And so popular were these celebrations that it led to a complaint from the chaplain to King Edward VI himself, the Bishop Hugh Latimer. And I quote, "I came once myself to a place riding a journey from London, and sent word overnight into the town that I would preach there in the morning because it was a holy day. And I took my horses and company and went thither. When I came there, the church door was fast locked. I tarried there half an hour and more. At last the key was found, and one of the parish came to me and says, 'This is a busy day with us. We cannot hear you. This is Robin Hood's day. The parish has gone abroad to gather for Robin Hood.'" Despite sounding like some kind of pagan abandonment, the parishioners might have had another reason for going to Robin Hood Day. During the Robin Hood Games, as they became called, it became customary to parade the villager's Robin and his men to other villages and towns, and this was to aid the fundraising of their local parishes, and these games went on for about 5 days, especially with all the crowds that gathered. Maytime celebrations were a big thing in England. Beginning at any time from May the 1st, there would be fairs, drinking of ale, competitions, morris dancing, sports and plays, especially the Robin Hood plays. And there is a curious irony, though, that the Robin Hood that we meet in the story wasn't celebrating any kind of May Day festival. Rather, he was wanting to attend Mass because of his devotion to the Virgin Mary. Indeed, he even describes the time of year as Whitsuntide. And Whitsun is actually the Christian festival of Pentecost, taking place on the 50th day of Easter, or the 7th Sunday after Easter, as it's otherwise described as. It is the celebration of the inspiration of the apostles via the Holy Spirit, and the prayers for which were thought to go to God directly through the Virgin Mary herself. So this would be why Robin wanted to say his prayers for the Virgin Mary, or maybe he had his own reasons. But going with the description here, I would say this has something to do with it. By the 11th century, Pentecost became known among the English as Whit Sunday or Whitsun, taking its names from the word white, because Whitsun celebrations include baptisms, ales, feasts, celebrations, even decorating the churches in greenery, and even well-dressing took place as well. Or that it came from the giving of wit to the apostles from God via the Holy Spirit, as suggested by the 14th century monk John Merck. And whereas the May celebrations took off from the 1st of May, Whitsun was regarded as part of Easter and was a big celebration. So I suppose you could say that between the May games and Robin Hood plays and Whitsun, May was one big party. But in medieval times, it was also one of the busiest celebrations of the year and attracted huge numbers of people to the churches of the time. Robin's influence in time stretches far and wide in England and even Scotland. The name of Robin Hood has been ascribed not only to people, but to places and parts of the landscape. In Nottinghamshire alone, at least 19 sites have been recorded to have been Robin Hood's cave, Robin Hood's well, and even a stone feature was called Robin Hood's chair, although the latter has been replaced by a more modern chair as the original was destroyed during the development of the Great Central Railway line in 1849. In Sherwood Forest, there are at least 3 trees reputed to have been part of the legend. The Trysting Tree was where Robin and his men were said to have used as a meeting point. Robin Hood's larder was a hollow oak tree, said to have had metal hooks attached, and these were used by Robin and company for the storing of the deer they had killed, illegally, for venison. The hollow was actually made by having been set fire to. Although this may have been a lightning fire, it's often thought that it was actually done by vandals instead. Sadly, the tree was actually blown down in the 1960s during strong storms of that time. And finally, and perhaps most famously, there is the Major Oak. It has been described as both a meeting place and even hiding place for Robin and his men. Originally named the Queen's Oak, it was later renamed the Major's Oak after Major Hayman Rook described it in a book back in 1799. The Major Oak is still standing, although supported with great beams to stop its boughs from falling to the ground. It also has a wide wooden fence around it and can no longer survive great numbers of visitors walking all over its roots. Despite the attached folklore to all 3 trees, it's actually thought that they weren't even saplings in Robin Hood's day. In conclusion, it is often thought that legends and myths come from the acts of people. These, in time, become stories that become legends that fade into myth. The Robin that we think we know was actually the diluted for children's stories version during the Victorian age. This in turn came from the post-medieval tales and plays of Robin Hood that included romance, which in turn followed the stories set in medieval times of a man called Robin Hood who seemed to abhor all figures of authority, be this of the crown or of the church. The figure of Robin Hood is different things for different people, and today he is a mascot and link to the past for Nottingham, where once his plays were enacted at the height of Maytime celebrations. They are only occasionally performed now, if at all. And today, the town of Edwinstowe, situated as close to the Sherwood Forest as you can get, hosts what is called the Robin Hood Festival, which runs from July to the end of August. As you may imagine, there are many more stories of Robin Hood, and in time we'll encounter these as we go down the future paths of the Other Wood. Thank you very much for listening. Whichever platform you listen to this podcast on, please do leave a rating and a review. And remember, the Other Wood isn't just where I am, it's where you are too. Until next time, mind how you go, and have yourself a good day.